are listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III. Well, Boston sports fans, just when you thought it could not get any worse. Well, that was Celtics coach Doc Rivers yesterday. I don't know if you could hear him, but what he said was Rondo will be fine. He just won't be fine this year. That's right. That's him after a double overtime win over the Miami Heat yesterday, which would be normally the big story, but almost no one's talking about it because we, of course, learned that all-star point guard Rajon Rondo is going to be out for the season with a torn ACL. This is with the sting of last Sunday's Patriots loss still sort of fresh on Boston sports fans. Many are saying this is the unofficial end of the Celtics season. Coach Doc Rivers, however, doesn't think so quite yet.
I'm not. The way I look at it is we're going to stay in there.
So they're going to just hang in there. I don't know, Doc. I don't know if that's going to be possible. I think a lot of people down on this. I'm with Eric Wilbur, who's Boston.com sports blogger and reporter with me, as he is many Mondays, to talk about sports. Eric, how big a deal is this?
It's a blow. It's a huge blow. And especially after a game like yesterday that was so entertaining. In such a statement game.
Double overtime victory. Miami Heat, of course, you know, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, Ray Allen coming back.
There was a lot of drama in that game, and for it to end the way it did was, you know, a satisfying win, obviously, probably the biggest of the season, but, you know, when you found out mid-game that Rondo was gone for the year, it's a big blow. Now, what faces the Celtics is can they survive without Rondo? Can they use the kind of resiliency they used yesterday without him in the short term, because they've got to show that. And if they can't show that, then Danny Ainge has some triggers he has to pull. You know, and that, if that's trading Paul Pierce or Kevin Garnett and kind of blowing this whole thing up because it's obviously not going to happen this year, that's going to be something we're going to have to watch. So, I mean, if the Celtics want to stay together and still want to contend for a title, they're really going to have to show it in the next few, you know, five or six, seven games.
I mean, with Rondo in the lineup, they've been struggling just to kind of remain in contention through the year at all. They're a couple games under 500. Mm-hmm. Until yesterday, they'd lost six straight. Is that right? Like season high six straight, I think. So they'd not really been playing all that well. Of course, recently you had Doc Rivers kind of having a little bit of a meltdown, you know, kind of sounding right, like a parent who was saying he was going to pull the car over. You know, he's just like, we got to do something. So, I mean, is it even possible without Rondo? I mean, is it even anywhere near possible for them to turn it around?
You know, that was the thought process last night. Celtics fans were trying to, you know, just tell him it's almost like the Homer Simpson with the pig when he has the pig roast and it flies. It's just a little airborne. it's kind of, you know, you're talking yourself into it that this could be, maybe the Celtics are better without Rondo. And the thought process behind that is
that possible?
Is he can be a ball hog. He can take, you know, errant shots at certain times. And maybe the Celtics are a more cohesive unit without their star player. I think that's a little foolhardy, and maybe we'll see in the short term that the Celtics can survive without him. But, you know, over the long haul, if you want to get to June and beat the Heat and beat, you know, Oklahoma City, you really need that guy at the point.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned earlier the return of Ray Allen. You know, Ray Allen was, of course, part of that original Big Three that got brought to Boston upwards of six, 7 years ago now.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
You know, that was, of course, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen. Ray Allen moved on, and Rajon Rondo sort of considered the new Big Three. He's like the third member of the new Big Three. Mm-hmm. Ray coming back yesterday, they had a big video tribute before the game, which, I don't know, do you think that was odd? Do you think that was appropriate?
It was a little weird.
It's weird, right?
I can't imagine the Red Sox having done that for Johnny Damon. You know,
it
just seemed a little out of place.
He hadn't been here for that long.
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, he was here for quite a few years. He was, in essence, the third wheel on that Big Three. And
the Chris Bosh of that Big Three.
And you know what? The crowd was good. They cheered the video tribute. And then when he went to the floor, they booed him. And every time he touched the ball, every time he was on the court, they booed him. And for him to say after the game it was very interesting, quote unquote, that's delusional. I mean, what did he expect? Did he expect, you know, just roses to be flying from the stands and saying, thank you, Ray, and welcome back?
Do you think because he played at Connecticut, you know, and is sort of a New Englander and thinks of himself as a New Englander, he thought he'd sort of be embraced a little bit more? Is that possible?
I don't know. I mean, he took less money to go to Miami, you know, and kind of stuck it to the Celtics. So I'm really not exactly sure what he was expecting.
Yeah, especially considering, you know, Miami obviously is one of your roadblocks.
Exactly.
You know, so he's in essence, I think, when he goes to Miami for less money, saying between these two teams who are close and were close last year in terms of who was going to come out of the East and play for a championship,
right.
I think that my chances are better down here in Miami.
It'd be like if David Ortiz got a 3-year contract for $30 million with the Red Sox and went to the Yankees for 3 years for $15 million. I mean, think about the angst that fans would have over that. And that's exactly what Ray Allen did.
Yeah. You just used that word angst. I think it's a good one right now.
Yes.
For sports fans. Just thinking over things right now. You look at last week, the Patriots with a very big loss to Baltimore mm-hmm. in the playoffs. And you saw, I think for the first time you saw people starting to question whether or not the Brady Belichick era is over or beginning to be over. Certainly now with Rondo out, you just mentioning they're going to look at trading Paul Pierce. They're going to look at trading Kevin Garnett. It looks like it could be the end of that Celtics era. It's pretty bleak right now.
There are the Bruins, though. I mean, the Bruins are, you know, they've come out of the gate pretty strong. There's some good things to see there with Dougie Hamilton, you know, emerging as a star defenseman in the league already after a handful of games. The way Claude Julien talked about him last, I believe it was last Tuesday or last Wednesday, the loss against the Rangers, and he was, you know, praising him. And I've never heard Julien talk about such a young player with such, you know, flowery prose. I mean, if you go back to when Tyler Seguin was a rookie, Julien was really, really hard on him and never delivered the kind of speech that he did about Dougie Hamilton. So, I mean, that tells you something right there. Hmm. And the Bruins, I think, are young enough that they can survive this 48-game schedule. It's a sprint, obviously. There are some good things to like there. The Patriots, obviously, you know, a year ago I wrote, I think, you know, the Brady era is coming to an end, and I really got some bad heat for it.
Well, he's kind of one of those, in a world where you can sort of be really critical of sports figures in a way I don't think people used to in the past. Brady remains pretty untouchable.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
I learned that.
You know, it's kind of astounding.
It is, and I mean, I really can't even get into it because, you know, I took so much heat last time, so I'll kind of refrain from trashing Tom Brady. And there's nothing really to trash about him. I mean, he's one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game.
Sure.
But at some point, there's an immortality there. You know, I mean,
he's 35
come to an
years
end,
old.
36. And he's looking down. I mean, by the time he was 36, his idol Joe Montana was with the Kansas City Chiefs playing out his career.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you look at it, on one hand, you say, well, Brady's still at the top of his game. He was an MVP candidate this year. He won't get it, clearly.
Yeah.
But he played at a top level for so long, but the playoffs aren't there. He's now 7-7 in his last 14 playoff games, and that's really what defined his career.
Yeah. I'm talking with Eric Wilbur. He's a Boston.com sports blogger and reporter. We're talking about the state of the Boston sports scene today on the heels of the news that Rajon Rondo is out for the season. Of course, the Patriots season just ended. You know what? If you want to vent, I want to hear from you. Let's open up the phone lines. Right now, I think sports fans are feeling pretty grim. Could the Bruins, as Eric says, maybe be the savior, the shining light possibly? I think sports fans right now, it's pretty tough. In fact, one of our producers was out yesterday among the sports bars trying to get a sense of how people were feeling following the Rajon Rondo news. We had one fan who had something very interesting to say. I want to play a little bit of what he had to say about how he thinks sports fans in this town are feeling right now.
I was walking back home today, and I walked by a tipped-over Port-a-John. And I thought it was very poetic because that depicts what most New England sports fans feel right now. So, unfortunately, hopefully everyone can take a shower after that. So,
okay, so I think that's A, the first time that a tipped over Port-a-John has ever been called poetic.
Yeah.
But B, I think it might be on the mark. So here's the phone number, 877-301-8970. That's 877-301-8970. Do you want to vent? Are you upset about what happened last week at the Patriots? Are you upset about Rondo? Are you thinking that, hey, wait a minute, things are fine, actually. What Eric has to say is correct. You know, the Bruins are playing well. There's something to look ahead to. There's something to look forward to. Give us a call. Let us know how you're feeling. So we were just talking as we were in the break here between two segments about the Red Sox. So we're talking about the state of the scene. We've got a couple weeks until pitchers and catchers start, but baseball's starting to warm up. So is this something to potentially be able to look forward to? And what came up here quickly was this mailer for Red Sox tickets. You want to explain what this is?
Oh, it was a full-page ad in the Globe yesterday. Okay. And it has a big photo of Pedroia. And the tagline was, what is broken can be fixed. Essentially, the Red Sox are playing up this storyline where they understand there's a feeling of anxiety out there right now, and especially on the heels of the Francona book that just came out last week, in which Terry and Theo, to a greater extent, Theo Epstein, former Red Sox general manager, really laid into ownership and kind of portrayed them as a bumbling trio.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting going into spring training to see how they address that. Last week when the book came out, conveniently was when they announced that Pedro Martinez is going to join the team as a special assistant to the general manager.
What is that? What is a quote-unquote special assistant to the general manager? Will he actually do anything? Or is it just like they just agree on that so they can write in the papers he's a special assistant? Does he call him up once a week and say, hey, how's it going? Here's a couple of ideas. Like, what is that?
Right. It's partly that. I mean, if you remember way back when, I think it was 2000 or 1999, they hired Carlton Fisk as a special assistant.
Sure.
And that was basically just so they could retire his number, and he would go into the Hall of Fame with, you know, Red Sox jersey on.
Mm.
It could be the same thing with Pedro. You know, maybe they want to retire number 45 out there, which, you know, I think all Red Sox fans would agree is a good process.
You can't do it anyway without making him special assistant.
Yeah, I mean he and Varitek are both special assistants now.
Yeah.
And it just kind of... When this was first reported, it was back in December, and I think it was at Ortiz's golf tournament down in Dominican Republic.
Mm-hmm.
Pedro brought up the point that he might be joining the Red Sox soon in some capacity. So he obviously knew then. The Red Sox probably knew then. But to announce it the day after this book comes out, in which they look terrible, was just a convenient little timing there.
Very interesting. All right, well, we got a call here from Anthony in Boston. We're going to see what Anthony in Boston has to say. If you want to weigh in, if you want to vent, if you want to talk sports a little bit right now with Eric Wilbur and myself here on Boston Public Radio, give us a call at 877-301-8970. That is 877-301-8970. Anthony, what do you got for us?
Yeah, is your show on every day?
This show, Boston Public Radio, is on every day, Monday through Friday, here on 89.7 from 12 to 2, but we're not always talking sports, but we are right now. What do you got?
Yeah, I'm talking about the Red Sox team and Terry Francona, you know, when he was manager.
Sure.
You know, of course, I'm not a Red Sox fan. I'm a Yankee fan.
What?
I'm from New York.
Okay, well, that's fair.
Anyway,
okay.
Francona was the greatest manager they ever had because they won two world championships with them.
It's a good point.
He won two world championships in 2004 and 2007. They didn't win since 1918. And, you know, for more than 60, 70 years, they were like a little brother to the Yankees. The Yankees always kicked their butt until 2004.
And it's not really that, the championships. It's, if you read the book, which is a brilliant read, you know, Dan Shaughnessy did a great job with
it. I'm not a fan
Terry.
Of Shaughnessy, to be honest.
He's got his fans, and I think he's got his detractors. And hey, I should mention, Emily Rooney is going to be interviewing Terry Francona tonight on Greater Boston at 7 o'clock. So check out, that's Channel 2, 7 o'clock. Emily Rooney, one-on-one for an entire half hour with Terry Francona. So go ahead, what were you going to say, Eric?
In the book, you really understand, and we all knew this, that Terry Francona is a player's manager. And it really comes out in his words about how important that is in this day and age where, you know, players are these coddled multimillionaires, that the hardness of a Lou Piniella or a Pete Rose doesn't work in the major leagues anymore.
Yeah.
You've got to be kind of a player's guy and understand. And that's part of the reason why Bobby Valentine was such a complete failure last year.
Yeah, but you know, the other end of that player's manager thing is,
they can
me
run
if
over
I'm wrong,
you. Yep.
You end up with the beer and chicken
and
video
that's what
game thing.
You know,
right?
That's what happened. In the
how
end,
do you strike that balance?
In the end, you know, the players, you know, ran over Francona. And I think a lot of it had to do with, you put one guy in, and this isn't singling out John Lackey, but John Lackey comes in and Beckett and Lester immediately attach themselves to him. You know, there's a passage in the book that says John Lester, who's from Seattle, all of a sudden starts wearing cowboy boots.
He starts carrying cowboy books. He's learning all about Roy Rogers.
Starts wearing cowboy boots and speaks with a Texas drawl.
Yeah.
I mean, it's and you look at things like that, and it's just interesting to see how people gravitate to each other, and maybe the Red Sox just didn't have the right chemistry there. If it were up to me, I would have given Francona one more shot, you know, to try to regain the kind of trust he had in his players, but clearly the Red Sox weren't into that, and the The book goes into great detail. It's a fantastic read.
All right, I'm talking with Eric Wilbur. He's Boston.com sports blogger and reporter. We're sort of taking a look at the Boston landscape right now, the Boston sports landscape, given some pretty tough things happening the last 2 weeks, including Rondo out for the season for the Celtics, Patriots loss, of course, two Sundays ago. We got a call from John in Abington right now. We got the phone lines open at 877-301-8970. If you want to check in, how are you feeling about Boston sports right now? I think John is going to give us the business right now about a sport that he likes that we haven't even mentioned yet. Go ahead, John.
Yes, it's only the most popular sport in the whole planet, on the whole planet.
It's a good point.
And
so
I want to know why they're excluded from the conversation when their average attendance is up in excess of the Bruins or the Celtics.
That's a great point. And if you can, for all of us listening here, describe and explain who they are in this
Well,
sentence.
It's a local Boston-based professional sports team that is consistently ignored by the media, mm-hmm. New England Revolution. And they have a rabid fan base, and a fan base that's getting tired that the mainstream media just leaves them out of the conversation.
I think it's a fair point.
I totally agree.
I think it's a fair point.
You know, I really don't follow the Revolution on a day-to-day
basis.
Let me ask
you guys. You're this is your business, so why do you exclude it from your conversation?
I think right now in this conversation, generally, I'm sort of thinking of it as something that's out of season, and it's sort of not on the top. It's sort of not on the docket right now. But I think you're absolutely right. And certainly for soccer fans, and I don't, John, are you? I mean, are you? Do you go to the games? You follow the Revolution?
Yes, I'm a season ticket holder. And what got me to call was you said, you know, what do we have to look forward to coming up?
Yep.
And then you say they're out of season, but they're preparing for their season, and for the first time in 3 years, there's some optimism.
Sure, especially
and
with the draft.
There are a lot of people
yeah.
out there that actually care, but they never bother to call in because they're left out of the conversation.
No,
well,
listen.
I love that you're calling in right now, and you know you're taking this to task, which I think
actually.
Is good.
It's a fair point. It's a very fair point, and I mean I've been to Revolution games. One of my best friends is a season ticket holder as well. And it's an underappreciated event. You know, it's a really fun time to go to a Revolution game, and I think you're right, caller. I think that a lot of that is just misunderstood, and it's not on the tip of the pulse of Boston fans. Just as so much else going on that, you know, soccer just doesn't resonate here. It does and it doesn't.
I think another thing, and John, I'd love to get your take on this, because I think one of the things you can make an argument that the NFL is the best football in the world, that league is the best football in the world, that the NHL is the best hockey in the world, mm-hmm. that you know, that the NBA is the best basketball
in the world.
No, you're right, but my point is that Major League Soccer is
compared to the Premier League
in England and other leagues in Europe and South America, it's not seen as the premier, the best players in the world are not playing there. I think maybe that's part of it, but I'm curious what your take is.
But if you look at the potential, I think there's a disconnect with the media as to how far it's come. And if they were to learn a little bit more about how far it's come, they might realize that it's not going away. It's for real.
What was the first year that they were in existence? The
96. And we're the only one of the very few teams that don't have our own soccer-specific stadium.
Right.
And something they're working on, I've heard, you know, there's proposals that are out there.
Correct.
They're talking about South Boston, they're talking about Somerville, there's been talk about Chelsea, there's been talk about New Bedford, Fall River area, so definitely something growing. John,
you're really only talking 17 years, too. You know what I mean? I mean, if you go back and look at the NBA in the 1940s, was nearly, not nearly the popular that is
I understand,
now, too.
But I do believe they need some mention, especially when you look at, I know the traditional sports fan, they're probably rolling their eyes right as we're speaking here.
Sure.
But my son and his friends, and even the ones that don't play soccer, the ones that are playing the other sports, they're fascinated by it now, and they don't even watch NFL. They want to watch Chelsea or Manchester United.
Yep. Yeah. But even to your point there, you said they want to watch Chelsea and Manchester United. Those are English Premier League teams. Great call, John. Thanks. Thanks for the call. Thanks for bringing soccer into the conversation. I think he's right, and he made his point right out of the gate, Eric, which is. To be taken is that it is the most popular sport in the entire world is soccer, you know, and he's right. It's not a big part of the conversation here in America.
I also think there is a little resentment currently right now against soccer, too, because, you know, the John Henry's involvement with Liverpool, people laugh about it and kind of feel overlooked at certain times by the owner who really has his attention set overseas. So I think from the sports standpoint, there's a lot of Boston fans that kind of resent it. obviously you have a huge soccer following here. I mean, you go to Cambridge and Central Square on any given Sunday, Phoenix Landing is packed with soccer fans. So
PJ Ryan's in Somerville is also a place that plays soccer, always packed Saturday afternoons.
Exactly. So, I mean, there is a the fan base that is here that does love soccer is rabid. Kind of reminds me of the Bruins, you know, 10 years ago when they weren't really on the forefront of Boston sports people's minds just because, you know, either they stunk or it was just one playoff loss after another. And that hardcore fan base was always still there. And I think in a lot of ways, you can bring that over to the Revolution. You know, when you go to a Revolution game, it's a small crowd.
But it's fervent.
It's nowhere near, you know, obviously the size of a Patriots game. But yeah, it's fervent, and it really is a lot of fun. I encourage anyone out there, if you haven't been to a Revolution game, just go. It's a good time.
And I think the thoughts are a stadium could help because one of the problems I think is even if you see it on TV, you see that stadium is three quarters empty because you're just and you don't expect that you're going to draw as many people as you would to a Patriots game, but because they're playing in Foxborough, it's sort of just from a you know moment you see it standpoint,
just
you're kind of like
thing,
oh
yeah.
Nobody's really at that game, even though there are thousands of people there.
Exactly.
Talking with Eric Wilbur, Boston.com sports blogger and reporter, we're taking your phone calls. How are you feeling about the state of the Boston sports scene right now? 877-301-8970 is the number. That's 877-301-8970. And right now we're going to talk to Jim in Peabody. Jim, how are you?
Hey guys, great show.
Thanks.
I just wanted to bring up you know, the age thing and kind of how it relates to me. I mean, I don't know how Tom Brady's managed to function at such a high level. I mean, he's, what, 36 now?
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, he's 35.
35. The same thing goes for Peyton Manning. You know, I mean, I don't know how these guys continue to do what they do. I'm a service member, and I can tell you guys right now, the abuse I'm taking from training, you know, staying in shape and stuff, it's you know, really taking a toll on my body at 33.
Yeah,
so
right.
To me, it's amazing that these men, especially in football, are you know managing to stay at that play at that level. And you also have you know KG and Paul Pierce, and obviously Ray Allen when he was there. They're all aging members of the team, and you know they've had their injuries. But you know you're still watching Kevin Garnett play, and you're saying, my God, he's still a heck of a ball player, and so is Paul Pierce. But you know, more so Kevin Garnett. So you got to wonder what you know, other than just naturally gifted athletes, what these guys are doing to stay in the game that long.
Well, that's a question, isn't it?
So, Jim, I'm curious. I mean, do you personally do you have suspicion? I mean, you look back, you know, obviously, I mean, look at the sports landscape over the last decade plus. Baseball's obviously had a serious steroid problem. Lance Armstrong thing is huge in the news right now. I think a lot of people have questions about the size of NFL players. I mean, do you sort of wonder about them using some kind of performance-enhancing drugs to extend the life of their careers?
You know, I hadn't really considered it with the basketball players, but I mean, I'm sure you know that there are some that are guilty of that. You know, it's got to be more that these guys, when they get off the court, they got to be having you know the best possible you know, massage therapy and ice down.
Yeah.
Just to keep them going. I mean, because like I said, you know, I got a shoulder injury, you know, an elbow injury and a back injury all the past couple of years, you know, your body's aging and these men are just, they're amazing. So the question about, you know, abuse of substances, who knows? I mean, who can really say unless, you know, you do a doping test, but, yeah, with Lance Armstrong coming out, I mean, he was still in triathlons, you know, a year ago. I don't forget how old Lance is, but you know, he was still competitively running triathlons.
Yeah,
right.
So you gotta wonder, but you know, Tom's knee injury doesn't seem to have affected his play that much. What do you guys think?
Well, I mean, I think you only have to look as far as Adrian Peterson last year when he ruptured his ACL and came back to you know possibly be the MVP.
Yeah.
It kind of raises some eyebrows, doesn't it? And the fact that Ray Lewis, you know, returns so quickly kind of raises some eyebrows there.
Yeah,
so
you don't know.
Just,
I mean,
a lot of these things happen to me coming a lot more frequently.
And sports medicine also, I mean, that's
the
field where they're always,
too.
Training methods, sports medicine, they're always developing that too. So it's really tough to know. Jim, thanks for, hey, Jim, what service are you in?
I'm a Marine.
That's great. Thanks for your service.
Excellent.
And okay. Thanks for the call.
All right, guys. Thanks. Good show. Thanks.
Thank you. And I hate to bring keep bringing the book up, but there is a passage in the Francona book where Pedroia is listed as a 40-speed runner, and that's on a scale of, you know, 1 to 80. Mm-hmm. And he trained in Arizona and made himself change his side-to-side speed to front and back. And it's an interesting little anecdote, and knocked his speed up another 5 digits. So I do think a lot of training is involved in what we're seeing with these aging athletes. At the same time, you know, I'm a big skier. I'm 39 years old, and I cannot, you know, do what I did when I was 28. It's just the natural effects of aging. And to see these guys, you know, this is their job. So they're training 365 days a year.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly going to the gym right after this, you know?
Right.
I should, but I'm probably not. And I just think in a lot of respects, you know, they're athletes. Yeah. So that's what they do. And I think it's a little different from 25, 30 years ago.
Line.
Too. Exactly.
There's so much money
millions
on the
and
line.
Millions.
And you know, even just as, you know, I think about the rise of sabermetrics and stuff in baseball and statistical methodology, that kind of stuff's also, that kind of brain power is also being put behind training and understanding. And to your point, like in baseball, you know, I don't know that 30, 50 years ago, somebody was running the numbers and doing a distinction between side-to-side speed and front-to-back speed and running the numbers and saying, well, as a second baseman, I really need to improve my front-to-back speed here, and then I'm going to work in Arizona to do that. Like, that kind of precision training, I think, is something that's grown over the last decade plus as well.
Sure, and there are so many institutes that do specific things like that. You know, there's the famous one in Arizona where, you know, all the ball players go. You know, that's where Jacoby Ellsbury rehabbed his injury to much, you know, chagrin from some of the Red Sox who thought he should be with the team. But it's performance enhancing institutes, not performance enhancing drugs, but those institutes really have come to light in the past, you know, 5 to 10 years, and I think have really developed the athletes that we see today. You know, is that saying there's any funny business going on? No, but
it's just they're paying attention to it, and they're
You know, there are different instances. You look at Peterson and you say, you look at a guy like Manning who came back to play at MVP caliber, but that was a spine. I mean, I don't know of any HGH that's going to really help your spine so much. So it's there are different circumstances out there.
Yep. I'm talking with Eric Wilbur, Boston.com sports blogger and reporter. We're casting an eye over the Boston sports scene right now. A lot of people have been down on it. A lot of bad news in the last 2 weeks. Patriots are out. Celtics have lost their all-star point guard. But Josh in Brighton, I think, see some sun through the clouds. What do you got for us, Josh? Welcome to Boston Public Radio.
Hi. Yeah, I was just going to mention that the Celtics had a really big win against the Heat the other night, and then I think it's kind of telling that in a season where the Celtics are last place in the playoff contention, and the Lakers at the same time looking pretty terrible.
Yeah, Lakers are having a rough go.
Two of the classic disaster sports franchises in the NBA managed to pull out wins against the finals teams from last year. I think that, you know, losing Rondo really hurts, but just like with the Patriots, when you have a great coach and you have players who are defensively sound, I just think that there's a lot to look forward to, maybe, at least if we can scrape our way into the playoffs.
You know, from a talent standpoint, they're obviously taking a hit. But from a team standpoint, you got to wonder what Pierce and Garnett think about this behind closed doors. Are they kind of glad to be without Rondo just because he was,
a divisive figure,
petulant at times, just a very, he's still very immature. He's one of the best players in the game, but he's not, you know, his game is obviously one of the best in the league, but is his attitude. That can be of some question. And you wonder, when you take away a guy like that, you know, let's go back to Manny Ramirez. You take Manny Ramirez away, and your team is actually better.
Yeah.
Just because guys are tired of dealing with such a personality.
And that kind of thing probably more important in basketball on a basketball court than in a baseball team, right? A baseball team, you're sort of all individually doing your thing on some level.
Yep.
Basketball, all five of you are out there working as a unit the entire time.
Exactly.
Well, so, Josh, you're going to be watching. Thumbs up. You still think the Celtics can do it?
Yeah, I think that I don't want to go too crazy here. I mean, I don't want to sound too confident because actually I'm a big believer that whenever the media gets too excited about Boston, especially the Patriots, they tend to go out there and then prove us all wrong. So
good,
I don't want to get
good
too
amount
excited,
of superstition, like a good sports fan. All right, we like it. Thanks for the call, Josh.
No problem. Thanks.
All right, so major sports. I want to talk a little bit before We let you go, Eric, about some of the quote-unquote minor sports.
Soccer?
No, I'm not going to call soccer a minor sport. Certainly not going to call soccer a minor sport.
Totally
it's not. The most
Liverpool
popular sport
with a big
in
loss
the world.
Though, so.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But we have PGA Tour. Tiger Woods is come out of the gate very strong in the first PGA Tour event of the year. They're actually going to tee off the final round or the rest of the final round at 2 o'clock. Because they got fogged out part of the day, but it looks like he's going to win that.
Yeah,
is he back?
I guess Lindsey Vonn is doing something for him, huh? I mean, of all the strange sports stories of the year, I know we're only 28 days in.
Yep.
This is the 28th, right? Yeah, 28. Yeah. 28 days in. That is the strangest to me.
The Lindsey Vonn.
What is Lindsey Vonn
Woods
thinking?
Thing?
What is she
Lindsey
thinking?
Lindsey Vonn dating Tiger Woods? Which has that been confirmed?
We haven't. No, right. No one's really confirmed.
There's also the report that Tiger Woods is trying to get back together with his ex-wife, and
right.
That there's millions of dollars on the table in one of the strangest prenups of
all time.
I mean,
what's going
well.
On here?
I don't know.
Meanwhile,
he comes out of the gate with what looks like a swing that he's been working on for the last 2 years, trying to get right. Looks like he's starting to maybe get that right. Is this good player out of the gate going to herald a return of Tiger Woods?
It's such a mental game, you know. Yeah. I hate golf because I can't think. First of all, second of all, it just drives me nuts. I quit years ago.
Yeah,
but you know, maybe he's beyond all the issues that were plaguing him finally, and that's bringing a new approach to his game.
All right. Well, okay. So that's golf. Did you watch any of the tennis over the weekend?
I tried to watch. Every
it's
time
tough
I tuned
when it's
in
Melbourne,
it was,
Australia, because right. It's at like 3 a.m. and 5 a.m.
Kept trying to tune in. Every time I tuned in, I think it was a taped. I kept looking for live, and I couldn't find live. So, I mean, it was entertaining. You know, too bad Sharapova lost early, because that would have kept me tuned in a lot later than I intended.
Yeah, it sounds like one of the big winners in the entire tournament was Sloane Stephens. Okay, so she upset Serena Williams, mm-hmm. right? Yep. And during this ESPN interview, after she upset Serena Williams, she said she wanted people to follow her on Twitter. She's 19 years old, right?
Yeah.
So she apparently had about 17,000 followers before she said this. By the end of the interview, she had 35,000. By the end of the tournament, she had 59,000 people following her on Twitter. So she's the big winner, I think.
Twitter's amazing. You know, it really is amazing.
It's cool how it connects you with sports people, though, isn't it? Like, in its own way?
It's fun. You know, I'm on Twitter, and I love the interaction with not only the readers and the fans, but other people. It's fun to have disagreements. It's fun to have, just a quick laugh here and there. It's such a great tool for not only fans, but the athletes. You know, a lot of athletes take to it, and all they do is, promote something that they're promoting, whether it's a charity or whatnot, which is, great.
Yep.
But a lot of athletes take to it and interact with the fans. You know, Will Middlebrooks is one of the guy that comes to mind. He's really good at, talking to the fans and interacting with them, which I think is fun. And it's such a great tool that I think a lot of fans, a lot of my friends are not on Twitter. They don't understand it. And I keep encouraging them, just to come on. They say, you just want more followers. But that's not really
the case.
That's
not what it's
about. No, it's
yeah.
just about, it's a fun interactive tool to have with people that you may not know. It's like going to a big sports bar and hanging out with everybody.
Oh, there you go. A plug for Twitter from Eric Wilbur, Boston.com sports blogger and
reporter. At Globe Eric Wilbur, by the way.
He's on Twitter. We're, of course, on Twitter at Boss Public Radio. I'm on Twitter at EB Herwick 3, so check us out. Eric, thanks for being with us and going over the sports landscape here.
Thank you.
Well, Callie Crosley is back here. Twitter, of course, is something that's been used now increasingly for civil disobedience as well, right? We certainly saw it as a big component in the Arab Spring and the Occupy movement here.
Oh, you don't have to go that far. It's right here in the U.S. of A. And that's just to let you know that a lot of protests is still going on, even though the temperatures are cold outside.
All right.
And we're going to get that roundup from the best reporter to cover this, Chris Ferrone.
I knew you were. It has to
Phoenix.
Be Chris Ferrone if it's civil disobedience in this
right.
town. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III.
All right. I'm Callie Crosley, and this is Boston Public Radio.